This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android.
I'm a Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name's Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, aka Andre Drummond. And on this pod, we'll be talking about Rangers League basketball. Wait, did I mix those up? Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. The president of the Andre Drummond fan club, basking in the glory of appreciation for Andre Drummond. Tim, how are you doing today?
Signing on. I'm doing well. It was a bummer that he got hurt. I felt like I was too negative in my Drummond tone when it was like him versus people I wanted over him, but he's on the team now and there are definitely things he helps with. And I spent like 8,000 words on an article trying to like consolidate all my thoughts and be like, all right, well, yeah, the defensive rebounding's a little bit overrated, but it's still a step up. Yeah. The finishing isn't great yet, but we're going to get him way better shots. And here's how much it's going to matter. So I tried to reposition the Kranjus perspective on Drummond because I felt like I was very, the tone wasn't where my internal thoughts quite were as much. And you're grinning because I'm still not a huge fan, but he's a Laker and I want him to succeed. I want the team to succeed. And it was a really big bummer that he got stepped on and his toenail fell off, which is miserable. Tom, have you ever had that happen? I've like stubbed my toe real bad where it's like pulled up with blood and like I've like laid in bed for a day because it just is in pain constantly. I cannot imagine having your toe just like your toenail completely come off.
No, I've gotten like pinky toe stuff, but that's like a very minor issue in comparison to, I'm sure Andre Drummond's big toe is like 2.5 inches across.
Yeah.
He's a huge dude.
Yeah, he's a huge dude. Brook Lopez is a huge dude. Like, this happens in basketball. There were very few times in my playing career where I had 10 toes that didn't look like one of them was, like, painted black from, like, blood underneath it. So, like, this stuff happens. But, like, he was very visibly in discomfort in that third quarter. And, like, not only was I watching – so I watched live. I rewatched every second that he played. And then I had to, like, rewatch again. And I was looking for when he got stepped on. And, like, I couldn't find it. I don't know if you were able to find it.
I wasn't looking because I knew you were, honestly.
I couldn't find it. And he looked pretty good. Like, stint one, he – just physically – we'll talk physically. He looked fine. Stint two looked fine. Third quarter, he was very evidently not feeling well. But before that, like, I didn't see a point in time where it happened, nor did I see him like exhibiting symptoms of like, you know, like looking at his foot or grabbing his leg or like, you know, lumbering around or anything. Like, he looked pretty mobile. And it's a shame that we didn't get to see him play the full game. And he may not have played a ton more anyway, given that he hasn't played in, you know, since 80s played plus a couple days. But that was a real downer on the whole thing because he flashed a few areas that I definitely think he can help the team.
We're going to fully break down the limited minutes that Andre Drummond was able to go through in his Laker debut, because that's been the big talk, right? We're still no LeBron, we're no AD. We could, you know, eventually here soon dive into other guys like Schroeder, KCP, Kuzma. Wes is coming on, Keith is coming on with the shooting. Mm-hmm. That's nice to see. They combined for 6 threes against the Bucks, but all of it came in like the first quarter. But anyway, get it. We're taking a dive into Andre Drummond today, and just kind of rebutting what you said about you and your negative tone. I do feel like, though, you know, I was the one advocating for Drummond, I think, a little harder. Mm-hmm. Not to say I was saying this is going to make us title favorites or anything. I think that's true when healthy, but I was more like, look at it practically, Tim. Like, Damian Jones is a nice player and he fits the role, but there are things that Andre Drummond can do. Like, there's one play I pulled where Andre Drummond, you know, they'd run a little like double high set. They, you know, KCP comes up, you know, gets another screen, and then end up with Andre Drummond in a handoff, and he fakes the handoff and he puts the ball on the ground.
Blocked at the rim.
But that was a freak play by Giannis. Giannis is a defensive player of the year, and
he got blocked three times. He took six shots and a seventh one that didn't count.
Stop.
And he got blocked three times.
You're missing my point. If you're
all right, I am.
And I'm gonna get into the bad shots that got blocked, like the classic Andre Drummond left hand hook, trying to get into Brooke Lopez and dismount him to create space, and you're like. Like, dude,
no. This one was a good play.
It's not
this one was
work.
A good play.
This is a good play. He rejects the handoff, and if it was a handoff of KCP, the alternative is not that much better. KCP taking the handoff and use it. Maybe he'll get a pull-up, whatever. If that's Schroeder, that's a different story. So that fake was a good play that none of the bigs in any of these equations, Mark, JaVale, Dwight, Damian Jones, any guys in any of these other conversations, except maybe Trez, but he's
Trez
a little undersized.
He doesn't do it as much, and he's undersized. You're right.
But Drummond got a good look. And those are the types of looks that you want him to, you know, cut around. Keep that and lose some of the bad post-ups. I have a 10-play offensive breakdown for him, but, you know, defensive, because he had like a 31% usage, but as far as turnovers, getting fouled, shots, he had 10 plays that I really watched on Synergy to break down. So there wasn't a whole lot, to be honest.
There. Well, I got your back, Tom, because I took notes on every single play he was involved in the game. Because
yeah,
he did
but you're going to blow up. Tim, this is a small sample, so we can't get too, you know what I mean?
Oh, no. I got you. But from like a usage standpoint, so there's the scoring usage, and you can look at what he was doing. There were also a lot of plays where he was screening or he was facilitating that from like a Synergy scoring possession clips, they're not going to show up. But over the course of the game, just watching, even in, just in this one game, and I think this one game is important, they kind of showed us how the team is seeing his fit. And it was a lot of that high post facilitation. It was like the team would run a set play and he would be part of setting a pin down or a flare screen or a staggered screen or something. And then if that didn't work, instead of just like isolating, like the team has done a lot in the past, it was, okay, let's get the ball to Dre. And then he from the high post would face up and other dudes would be moving and cutting or screening for each other. Or if not, he would go dribble at somebody and either execute a dribble handoff or that fake dribble handoff like we saw. So it wasn't just like usually there's a first wave of offense and then like LeBron, AD do something. And if LeBron and AD aren't playing, it's not good offense. Now we have kind of a second stage. Yeah. That middle stage. And I think that's a really important, and he's a huge piece of that because we haven't seen that happen as much, especially if Gasol's on the way out of the rotation, which I'm not sure I fully agree with. I understand some of the sentiment around it, but that's neither here nor there. Drummond, as part of this equation, brings that aspect to the game. And that was very evident in the clips. And like, I don't know, his screening in the beginning of the game, he was like actually like turning out of a lot of them. Like he would rotate his body. So instead of like, when you're fighting someone, when you go, I went to like one boxing class, and instead of facing right at somebody, Tom, where you've got
no
this
idea
whole,
where this is going.
You've got this. No. So if you're trying to fight me right now, you've got this big target because I'm squared up to you. If I'm turned, And I, you know, my hands can still do their thing, but my body is turned. My like chest is facing to the left or the right of you. You have less of a target. And Drummond was turning himself from that big target into less of a target, I think, to just not get hit in the chest as often. And that might be a he's coming back thing. But this is something that I've been talking to Detroit people and my Cavs friends privately, and they've said this guy likes to slip a lot of screens and avoid a lot of contact.
He's not a physical player.
He's not physical. But he did get better at it throughout the game. I do want to give him credit for that. He started out not so hot, and like a lot of these plays that resulted in him getting those high post touches were because he didn't set a good screen to start with. So the initial action just didn't work because of him. But a lot of that doesn't work for the Lakers anyways. And he's been able to provide that second punch, which I think is really important. And throughout the game, I think the screening definitely got better. That's a on film thing. Maybe he'll be held a little bit more accountable in this environment with these coaches and teammates, perhaps a little bit more than in Cleveland. So there's my, I don't know, it's a critique, but it's very fixable. And I think they'll be looking at it and trying to fix that. Because if they do, he can certainly do it. And that really helps the team.
Yeah, I tweeted during the game that just having a facsimile of a role like a LeBron or an AD is kind of a reason you bring Drummond in, because it slides everyone back to a more comfortable position where they're mm-hmm. more likely to succeed. And you know, you were tweeting about the delta between the Lakers' shot quality and their shot making. So, you know, bringing those shot quality, like, we need that shot quality to stay good. Otherwise, this team has no shot. And Tim, per clean glass, filter out garbage time, but the Lakers, 70.7 per 100 possessions in the half court against Milwaukee. And I wonder what that would be outside of like filtering out the first quarter when it wasn't garbage time, when they were actually making shots. So
bad. They went from like, they hit what, 8 of 12 threes to start the mm-hmm. game, and then hit like nothing. 2 of 20 so it's like after that, too hot, a little bit too hot, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, we'll take it. And then like way, way below what you should be shooting. So there was never really like a, you know, for this period of time, this is kind of what it might look like, because the shot making was just all over the place.
So Drummond, like you said, opens the game, nice pick and roll shooter, gets an over the top look, but I think that pass was maybe a little high, but it's not a good catch. He pushes it down and, you know,
he's
it goes.
Bad at it.
He like exactly like volleyball swats it down to try and go in, which is not a great strategy, but he just couldn't get a grip on it. Didn't work. Second possession, he does a little pick and roll. High up with he was standing a lot at that right elbow a lot when the Lakers would get in their sets. Either mm-hmm. he'd turn and, you know, set a screen for a KCP, or he'd step up to set the screen for the pick and rolls. A lot of pick and roll from the Lakers in this game. And so he sets a little pick and pop with Kuz, gets the ball, makes a weird little 15-foot push shot. You know, gets a nice little bounce there, and then gets a terrible possession here. ISO post touch, left side against Brook. You know, he's running in trying to do this sweeping hook shot. And it's just those kind of shots that completely are, I guess, available now, but I don't think will be once full healthy. I don't think that's going to happen too often. I still stand by that.
Yeah. And it's the type of thing that, like, if I'm remembering the right play that you're talking about, like, he kind of cleared Brook's body. He, like, it was a nice drive, good ball handling. He got to a decent shot.
He creates the shot, it was just
bad touch around the rim. Yeah. But if that same guy with that same mobile skill set that can get to those spots, if he could put him in at a higher rate, which he used to do, but not like this year, not last year. This was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. He could get to those spots and then put those shots in. And it was like, man, this guy is a dominant post player. The way the Mark Jackson was talking about him, you know, as the game was starting, which bothered me and a lot of people. But you can see the potential with how he can get to those spots. It just, again, he just missed a baby hook. And he had another one later in the game against Brook Lopez. He got just packed on. He got blocked a couple other times. I think blocked 3 times, and he only took 6 shots. And then there was a 7th one that was blocked, but KCP got called for a moving screen. So the block mm-hmm. doesn't count. The shot doesn't count, but he got blocked. Well,
so like, just to your point though, I feel like we did a really good job, and I want to point this out, at breaking down what Drummond was. He was exactly what we talked about, right? He can create post ISO shots, but isn't good at making them.
Yeah. It's the finishing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the drop coverage that he played, and we'll get into defense more.
Yeah.
You know, like play by play.
Offense.
Yeah.
Because the playmaking was there. We didn't get to see any of the like outlet passing yet. That'll come. That's a chemistry thing. He got 1 rebound. So it's not like he had many opportunities for the outlet passes. And let's talk about the defense. Or I'm sorry. So we're talking offense. I don't want to get to the defense rebounding. Offensive rebounding. He was a little bit less active when the game started. Once we got second quarter, late second quarter, he really started fighting for position a bit more. He started the game off a little bit more passive on the boards. He would, when a shot would go up, he'd walk towards the rim. If you got in his way at all, he'd stop there. He wasn't hitting anybody. He wasn't fighting at all for position. You really want to carve out space, get good leverage on a defender, try to push them as far under the rim as possible if they are trying to box you out, so that if the rebound goes anywhere instead of right in front of the rim, you have that new inside position by being, you know, further away from the rim. He wasn't quite doing that. Later in the game, he got a little bit more towards that, which is part of why it's difficult for me to just like discount a whole portion of his play, because certain elements of his game got better as the game went on, certain elements of his game got a little bit worse as the game went on, and again, I don't know when he got stepped on, but that's something that I was keeping an eye out for, because he is a high conversion rate, high impact offensive rebounder, and he didn't quite look locked in or unlocked in that respect, but that's something to definitely look out for. Like you said, we called a lot of these elements. The playmaking, he was making the right passes. He was working from the right parts on the court. He was bringing the right elements to his passing. He had, I think, the second play of the whole game for the Lakers. He got a post touch. He's facing up a ton and surveyed the floor, saw that because he had a mismatch, the Bucks were trying to bring baseline help, which is something the Lakers have struggled with all season long. And Kyle Kuzma was wide open for a skip pass. And he didn't just make the right pass. He made it quickly. He made it on target. And like, it wasn't that it just wasn't a turnover. It went right in Kuz's shooting pocket.
Yeah.
So he was able to rise and fire and get a great shot off. Those sorts of like really simple passes from a post player is something that would really help the Lakers. So that the high post passing, the low post passing, a lot of it was simpler, but he did make some of the more complex reads, and that was encouraging. He had one bad turnover trying to hit a back cut into some traffic later in the game. But other than that, I was really pleased with the passing and the dribble handoffs. And that, again, that second stage of the offense he gives you by just being able to, you know, get to his spots, but also involve his teammates and be a big body that can screen as part of that.
Yeah, he had said that he got stepped on in the first quarter. So I'm trying to, like, you know, put like at what point in that shift, but that from there on, judging the second quarter and on plays with that in mind, and just, you know, no.
I don't know.
He ripped his toenail, Tim. And but I'm not excusing it.
Yeah.
I'm not excusing it. But stuff like you mentioned, the backdoor pass to Kuz, mm-hmm. Milwaukee was sagging the hell off the Lakers shooters. So on that play, like, Giannis is right where Kuz is cutting. And it's like Andre. No, that's what I'm saying. You can't just say his toe hurt. No, but I'm saying right. physically not getting more than one rebound. Mm-hmm. You can look at the data and say, maybe you just couldn't get that lift, you know, and look at the film.
Yeah. And I don't think the lift was there. That was something that I had a question. Like, there were certain elements where I was like, I had a pretty good feel for he's good here, he's not as good here. You know, within the context of the Lakers, here's how that fits in. And go read my B-Ball Index article if you want to see more of that. That all still stands as written. One of the elements I was looking at this game for more insight into is his, not just his mobility, but his lift. Because he's lost some weight. He said he's in pretty good shape. He was somebody that used to be a lob threat. And like the scouting report that the broadcast gave was that he's a lob threat, which and that's what Frank Vogel said too, which surprised me. I think he's caught one lob this year. I looked at every shot he's finished at the year. I think I counted one lob. And that first play of the game, which was a play we've run, I think Damian Jones in mm-hmm. what he played, like 10 games, he had like 7 lob dunks.
They did it
like
last 10 year dunks for total. JaVale too.
Yeah, JaVale. Like, this is something Vogel likes to use. Yeah. So I was encouraged to see this play because it's a good play to start the game. They have that little UCLA cut and the player cutting after cutting to the rim, then runs to the opposite corner off of an exit screen, one of those screens where the corner player just takes a couple steps in and tries to not let the shooter's defender follow him to the corner. So that's happening as Drummond sets that ball screen for Schroeder, I think mm-hmm. it was.
Yep.
And then he is rolling to the rim on a completely empty side of the court other than, I think, Kyle Kuzma. Yeah, it was Kuzma was at like the wing really high. So his man can't really help on that. So you are designing this set to get an open lob to start the game. Super exciting play, highlight play. The Lakers love doing this. And he, you know, he completely unimpeded path, had a perfect runway. And It just didn't look like he got the lift. The lob maybe was a tad high. I looked at that same play that we were, because I've you know, grabbed some of these clips of film in the past. That lob was on par with where it was for like a Damian Jones, or like Trez finished a lob of that height earlier this year. This one, Drummond didn't seem to be able to. Tom, I looked at the.
I don't think Trez can catch that ball straight up.
Okay.
I don't think Trez gets his hands on that ball.
He got one of them. This, like, it's a play that we saw Jones run pretty well, and he brings different things than Drummond. What I'm trying to say is, I look at a dude having a perfect runway, nobody hitting him at all, being able to go up with a fairly well thrown lob and not looking comfortable with it. To me, like, it's, you know, give him some more time. Maybe this is something he can do, but I question whether or not that is his game. And if it's not his game, I just wouldn't be putting him in those positions. You can run other good sets to start games off that aren't, you know, don't throw the new guy into the fire for something that he's not going to succeed at. I think that's the way I look at it. Like, I used to barely be able to dunk, and I had to have perfect footwork, a clean runway, and just barely could I get it. And I know if any of those things were off, no, not at all. And he seems like the NBA equivalent of that, from like a finishing lob standpoint. And like, he can dunk just fine, you know, when he's able to power through it. But it, I don't know, it just didn't look comfortable. He doesn't seem to have the same lift. And he's had 3 calf injuries and 1 Achilles injury over the past 13 months, I believe. And I know those are parts of your body that do impact your jumping ability. So this is something I was looking for. We're going to have to see some more. Hopefully his toe gets okay. But that is something that I think is still a question mark in his game.
I mean, got to look at the whole picture. Is what is Colin Sexton like in passing out of the pick and roll? How was Reggie Jackson in Detroit at throwing lobs? All of it comes into consideration. But I do agree that Tim, he did not look comfortable with that particular lob. But I swear, if you go back, Trez doesn't get hands on that ball.
He had one using that set play.
I'm just saying. Okay. Look, watch that play. Line up with Trez.
I mean, they don't run it with Trez because I don't think he can. I agree with you.
That's what I'm saying. So, but there are other things to Drummond too. They ran, like I mentioned, that little double high action where he rejected the handoff and got to the basket, but Giannis made an amazing play. He has some bad dribble into traffic moments. He had a little side, like weird, like 10 feet from the hoop pick and roll with Caruso, like little handoff action, and just dribbled straight into like Drew Holiday, Chris.
Someone was stunting. These guys,
these guys are digging.
He didn't see the stunt.
But Milwaukee's going to help hard off the weak side and pack the paint. And recover. And so part of it was like Drew Holiday eating, you know, them in their scheme working with Drummond forcing the issue. And he also got a grenade from Markieff in a low shot clock situation. Yep. So I don't count that against him. It missed pretty badly, but 18-foot mid-range shot didn't look great. He had another play where, like I mentioned, gets the ball low, pretty low entry on Brook. Tries to bully him, puts a shoulder down, gets physical, left hook from 4 feet away, and Brook didn't move. Brook blocked it away, easy. And no, Brook's still a solid post defender, I would guess, if you looked at his data. Yeah, so it's just exactly who we thought Drummond was, I think. He tried that backdoor pass, like you mentioned, but it's like the read wasn't there, but I like he has that in his bag to begin with. So when the read is there and they show him the film and say, like, look, you're doing this from the top of the key when there's like literally 4 guys with a foot in the paint on the Bucks. And even if Kuz catches that pass, he has to finish through Lopez, Middleton, and Giannis. And so maybe he kicks it out, but, you know, they want that shot. They want the Lakers to shoot those weak side threes because we've been really bad at them. And I think my last offensive point is harking back to what you said about his screening. He said a really bad turnover, offensive foul screen. He just like missed the screen, or, you know, he's setting a screen for Holiday. Holiday's going to cut under to recover to Schroeder. And Drummond just pivots to like, now I'm going to screen you with my butt on the other like 45 degree angle. And the refs called it well, but like lazy. Yep. Either you move your feet to reestablish the screen, like quickly shuffle your feet, or you stay firm and widen those shoulders just enough to where you're not going to clip them for an offensive foul. So just little stuff like that. I think hopefully they get in the film room and say, these are the small things we need you to do. Set hard screens, you know, get... He was fine in drop coverage, you know, getting bodies on guys, I felt, but other little things on defensive rebounding. So, yeah, that's kind of my last offensive notes for him.
Yeah. For just a general observation, and it hits out a lot of the offensive areas, is he plays in a lot of ways like he's much shorter than he is stylistically. Like when he's setting the screens, he'll kind of like, you know, lean away from the contact at times, the way you see like a guard who's about to get run over by a big man. Or when he's in the post and he's attacking, he's not generally like going at people with force. He's going around. And yeah. We saw that one play. He tried to go baseline. He got cut off on the baseline. And then he lost his balance and almost threw the ball away. The other play, he tried to go around the middle and he got blocked. The one other play, he tried to go around the middle and he just missed the hook shot. But he's a – like he has mobility and he uses that mobility. And he's very much a like guardish type player and a big man body in that specific way. And that also translates on the defensive end with his pick and roll coverages where – and I tweeted out some pictures just because this isn't like a criticism, but I think it looks funny. He leans forward a lot. He like his head's like over, not his heels, over his like toes to the point where like it looks like he's sitting on a bench, but the bench isn't there. Like he's doing like these wall sits without the wall. That's how low he is. And when someone drives on him, he's going for strips. That's he's not trying bad. To block shots as much in the same way that like if you're driving on Rajon Rondo, he's not going to try to block a shot. He's going to strip at the ball. If he doesn't get it, he's getting out of the way. Andre Drummond on a lot of these, he has very active hands. And by being so low to the ground, he's able to really swipe at the ball. And he's very smart and opportunistic about it as well, in the sense that when a guard is going around that screen, and they feel that back pressure and they put that dude in jail. They put him in booty jail. A lot of times you like take that split second as the guard to like look over your shoulder, make sure you know where the dude is. You're dribbling directly in front of you. Your attention isn't on the dropping big and he'll go in and he'll just swipe right at that ball. And I sent you that screenshot. It looked like he was doing like a Cobra Kai move where he like did like some martial art move at the ball. And to his credit, he got the ball. So he has his own very unique style. And then like a second later, he nearly did a split. I'm surprised he wasn't injured. He's a very unique player with a unique style of drop coverage in that like normally drop bigs are the dudes that you're dropping to like be big, you know, towering rim protectors. And he's dropping, but if you get a little bit too close, he's swiping at the ball. And then if you drive to the rim, he's still swiping at the ball. And if he doesn't get the ball on his swipe, he more frequently than any other big I've watched will let you just rise and fire without him actually contesting the shot. And another part of that, I think, is because he's so crouched over and he's leaning so much, when he does reach for the ball, he's committed. His balance is forward. Or when he's crouched over, if he's not reaching, his balance has to be back because, again, he's doing that like sitting on a bench without the bench being there. All of his like his center of gravity is very much backwards. So if you dribble at him, don't get too close and you step back or you just rise for that pull up jumper, he's off balance to the point where he's not able to contest those as well. And same sort of thing when guys get to the rim against him, he's a little bit off balance. So that's the downside of how he plays, but how he plays is also how he generates as many deflections and steals as he does. So it's just a very different, unique style of player that I have not seen, you know, that kind of guy in that kind of role from my time watching basketball. I don't know if he reminds you of anybody, but it's a little bit different. So I wanted to kind of break out the nuance of that pick and roll defense because it's obscure a little bit, but he's good at it. And the question with him then becomes like, can he play the more aggressive screen coverages, or will putting him in more of those situations be troublesome for the Lakers? Might he get blown by or be causing fouls or things like that?
Yeah, let's go ahead and I'll take a quick break and then let's dive deep into the defense the way we did with the offense. Hey, it's Tom again. This time to talk to you about hosting your own podcast with our distributor, Blue Wire Pods. And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As a part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that,
if you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll help you get your show pushed to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listen to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get in your application today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. So Andre Drummond on defense had a kind of a loud first couple possessions, I feel like, in a couple ways. He got that double jump block, you know, on Dante. And so kind of what happened was he was helping, you know, Giannis. Keith was on Giannis, kind of Giannis getting to the rim. Drummond steps up.
Face cut. Drummond got face cut is what happened to start, which is something that would get me benched and has gotten me benched in basketball. Where and getting face cut is when you're the off-ball defender and your man or the guy you're responsible for cuts towards the rim in front of you. In like he cuts across your face. If someone's gonna cut in basketball, especially high school, college basketball, they drill this into you. You bump that guy. You get between him and the ball, and then you kind of trail him through his cut. If a guy is able to cut right across you, that allows him to really easily catch the ball, and then you're in a bad situation. So that's how the play started. And then so it went from, oh, no, to really good, you know, amazing from there. So sorry to cut you off. Well, keep going.
Gets face cut. He helps on Giannis, recovers back to his own guy in a quick double jump to get the block. This is Dante DiVincenzo. Not sure what his finishing at the rim rating is. You know,
he's a slow dunker guy.
But yeah, it was a nice play. It was a nice play from Drummond. And you know, on another play, you see some of the I can't believe this guy is so bad at closing out, because there's this play, Middleton's in the corner. The play gets break down. Middleton gets the ball in the corner. Drummond's on the right block, so he just has to run straight at Middleton. Kuz is on like that right wing, so he comes in to like bracket Middleton to come back, you know, across the top. So they're good defense. Andre Drummond instead veers to his right. Chris Middleton drives straight down the baseline, so Keith has to step up and help. And then it's full on scramble mode where, and he doesn't fully, you know, he's not on a string with these five guys as far as that scramble mode. So and you're going to see a lot more scrambling lately.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one scramble drill I think he was like around for. And he's the reason it happened, because of that weird closeout that had to involve other players. And then once that happened and players were scrambling, he just stood still. He observed, and this is where I think the chemistry piece of it is going to hurt him. There are certain elements of his game that it doesn't matter that he hasn't played for a month. There are certain elements of his game that it doesn't matter that he hasn't played with these Lakers before. There are a lot of elements where those things do matter, and this is one of them. Where, like, over time, he's going to get those principles down and hopefully be pretty good. And I think he projects to be good in this system given his mobility. But right now, where everybody's flying around and we're so used to watching this Lakers team be so good at that, he's more of an observer. So that's a film work thing. Unfortunately, that's also a like get on the court and work through it, work through the Kinks thing. But this is probably the low end of what we're going to see from him in that respect, in that specific area, just because he's so new.
I mean, you saw this from Wes, Schroeder, Harrell early in the season. Guys just, you know, he just takes time to learn what each other has to do, you know, and the principles of the Lakers defense and scrambling it. There was another really, really awful closeout that was kind of more toward the wing. It just, he just like kind of lets a guy, like he closes out to only one side, Andre.
He like led with his high leg. He said, like he straight up, like one of the worst closeouts.
Like red carpet from a Laker play. To the lane. Yeah, like, it's incredibly bad.
Yeah, you when you close out, you want to get into choppy steps and you don't want to present a high leg, because if you do, that gives that red carpet like you're talking about for the player to attack you a specific direction. Sometimes you do that on purpose to send them towards the help. This was not one of those times. This was, it very much compromised the defense. And in addition to presenting that high leg, he reached too. So by doing both of those things, he completely put himself out of the play. And I think it was Drew Holiday ended up getting fouled at the rim 2-3 seconds later because of it. So that was the bad. We did see some better closeouts, but closing out is one of those, like, you know, you got to get 90% of them right. If you're getting 60% of them right, you're really doing a poor job. If you get like 90% of them right, you're like doing the baseline, you know, minimum expectation. This is just more a fundamental baseline skill set. And he didn't have a good first game. It was only one game. But we're going to keep an eye on that
freak
one.
Injury.
You saw and it. I saw it. No, we're going to keep an eye on that one.
That's the thing, too, where I can't emphasize enough the freak injury. Because it's one thing if he comes back from 2 months. I don't care how much you work out. You shoot in the gym. It's not an NBA game, you know. And even with the adrenaline pumping, you have to push your body to levels that you might twist an ankle or tweak a leg or a knee. This was a toenail. This is a freak injury, impact injury that could happen to anyone at any moment, right? So it's just straight up bad luck. And he looked limited after that, from that injury. But, Tim, when you start talking about principles of defense and bad closeouts, to me, not everything's there is getting fixed, my guy. Maybe some of it gets a little better over time, but that's about the ceiling I would be as far enough to go to expect. So don't think that even though the pointed out, like, you can only fix so much at once so fast. Yeah. And it's just like what, like the closeouts are so bad that to me seems like a little like more pressing than some of the other stuff.
It's a red flag. And it's one of those things that like, an offense works so hard to generate an advantage. And then as a defense, you fight to put those little fires out. And this is one of those skill sets that if you don't do a good job with it, the second that fire's put out and you should be in a neutral situation, you are just conceding an advantage really out of nowhere. No screening action, no like super good one-on-one skill. If you can just let guys blow by you because you're out of position or you're closing out poorly or both of those things. And I think his positioning is part of this as well. That allows the offense to create extra advantages that they otherwise wouldn't have. And that's the next thing about his defense I want to talk about. It stood out to me how often he started ball watching and then just slowly walking towards the rim, regardless of who he was guarding, where they were standing. He was going to go for that defensive rebound. He didn't box out once in the game. Once he did a two-hand push Brooke Lopez, but other than that, I didn't really see him put a body on anybody. He was looking for boards, and I may have just missed a few. He was very much looking for defensive rebounds, and in a way that like his mobility, I think, should allow him to get out in transition, and he can be the recipient of outlet passes. But his tendency, his behavior is, even if I'm guarding Chris Middleton at half court, I'm gonna run back and I'm gonna try to get that defensive rebound, which in some ways is good, but I think the way the Lakers approach transition offense is more positional on the court rather than height or like shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, point guard kind of based. If you're closing, like we've seen this from Anthony Davis, he closes out at a shot at the top of the key and he keeps going and he looks for that outlet pass. Drummond closes out on that shot, or he closes out, his guy swings the ball and he continues standing there, and then a shot goes up. He's you know, booking it back to go after a rebound. That's a little part of his game that was fine in Cleveland to fit best with the Lakers and get the team playing out in transition. Sometimes he needs to not be chasing those defensive rebounds and try to go get out in transition. So that was one thing I noticed. And just a little bit of ball watching, a little bit of roaming, some just positional defense stuff that can be cleaned up. I don't know if it's because he was guarding Brook Lopez and just didn't care for Brook Lopez's three-point shot. I don't know if it was, you know, just a new guy hasn't played in a while thing. We'll monitor it. It's not a huge red flag for me right now, but it made me ask some questions. It made me at least write it down to keep an eye on it moving forward.
And I think he did fine against Giannis, and it's a couple different possessions here and there, but I wonder how much of this conversation is framed by the fact that Marc Gasol came in for 6 minutes, played Giannis straight up for like four or five straight possessions to a stop, and gave the Lakers actually a chance, if they had any offensive output at all, to cut that lead from 15 to 7 at the 5 minute mark and give themselves a shot, no matter how long shot it may be, at winning that game. And I gotta say, much, much better game from the Lakers overall than I had anticipated, especially the first quarter. First half started to, their second quarter started to slip away, but they made threes, like you said, eight threes. That's great. Mark came in and showed this guy deserves a spot in the rotation. And Trez, you know, didn't have a great game, but certainly Trez deserves time in this rotation. Now, Andre Drummond in part came here because, right? Just whatever understanding we as outsiders have, we understand that Pelinka used to be his agent. He came to the Lakers not only to win a chip, but to be a key cog. And sounds like he was promised a starting position. So that's, you know, your name's on the marquee. You got all eyes on you, and you've got an opportunity to contribute to a possible title team. So what then happens to Mark? What? We didn't see Mark and Trez in the same lineup, like we've been kind of pining for since even the beginning of the season.
Yep.
So what next? What? I mean, it's maybe easier now that Drummond maybe isn't going to play 40 minutes. But yeah, but what next?
So I want to just pump the brakes a little bit. And I was where you are until I saw a tweet from Mike Trudell, from a quote from Frank Vogel saying, we want to use the Gasol Trez 5-4, 4-5, whatever it is, lineups, but just not tonight. That I even tweeted out, oh crap, you know, we haven't seen Gasol yet, and we haven't seen Gasol Trez together at all. I would have assumed this move unlocks that, and it's a very, you know, why the teams, they've played 0 seconds together this season. This would have been that chance. Why isn't it happening? That was the piece of info that, like, okay, if you don't think it's a good match for the game plan for the opposing team personnel, that's fine. I'm going to look for the next game or the games after that. So I don't take anything away from this individual game from that perspective, but I agree with you that we should see it. And I think that Marc Gasol is an important basketball player on this team, plays very good defense. He's the fifth best defensive impact according to D. LeBron. He's taken on hard matchups this year. He's doing a good job defending the rim. He's very much, we call them a litmus test of basketball. And like 3 days later, the Lakers like bench him. So it was like a, oh, moment. What are your thoughts on the situation?
Sorry, I just got the update from Dave McMenamin. There's optimism that Lakers center Andre Drummond will not miss more than a game or two with his right big toe injury, sources told Woj and me. LA plays at Sacramento on Friday and then the Clippers in LA on Sunday before their 5-game East Coast road trip. So you'd have to assume he's probably out for Sacramento and then hopefully back for the Clippers and maybe even miss that game. So just wanted to throw that out there. And, you know, this gives the Lakers a chance to go back to normal, so to speak, and reset that lineup to the pre-Drummond days where Gasol slides in and Trez stays on that bench role. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting the way Frank talked about that Trez-Gasol lineup was the way we talked about before the season, the AD-Trez lineup. So the fact that he's thinking on those terms, that has to be in the back of his mind, where we said on offense, Trez is the 5, and on defense, Trez is the 4, and AD can, you know, play that 5 on defense that makes him so good, but not have the limitations on offense of being the five that maybe he doesn't like as well, and have a guy in the dunker spot alongside him. So, just want to throw that out there. Drummond, really tough game. It wasn't pretty at times, I will admit, but you did see some glimpses of where he could be useful. And I didn't mention a nice pick and roll with Schroeder that he had, got a pocket pass, got a lane to the basket. He finished over Brooke Lopez. So more Schroeder, Drummond, pick and roll, once he's healthy, could be useful for this team right now in scoring.
And I saw some IQ from Drummond in that Schroeder-Dre pick and roll. That was really encouraging for me because there were a couple plays where Milwaukee switched it, and Drummond immediately recognized that. There was no lag. There was no rust. He knew exactly what was happening as it was happening, and immediately would turn his body, seal off his new defender, who was much smaller than him, put a hand up and start, you know, booking it to the rim, making himself a target, which attracted defensive attention from other players. Even though he hasn't been a great finisher this year, you know, he's a big dude. That's going to attract some attention. And then the Lakers were able to get open skip passes. So that's a play that's not going to show up in the box score. It's not something a ton of people are going to talk about. It's like, oh man, look at this great play Andre Drummond made. But if he just kind of stands there after that switch and lets the defender get back around him, nothing happens. Because he recognized it instantly and did the right thing instantly, it attracted that attention, and the Lakers got a good shot because of it. So that was just one of those little things that I liked. I do think Drummond thinks he's a lob threat. The way he runs, the way he rolls after some of the screens against drop coverage specifically, he is rolling for a lob. And against Brooke Lopez, who's dropping, it's not really what's there for you, Dre. What's there is that little pocket pass for that push shot that he's been good at this year. Over the past couple of years, it's been a little bit less pretty, but this year he's been hitting those. You know, we've seen Trez be really good at those. That, you know, get into the open spot, give your guard the angle, and there's an outlet there. If you overrun it and you close the angles off, you're not going to get the lob a lot of these times. When the lob's thrown, I hope they go in. But Schroeder might not throw those lobs. And if you don't give Schroeder that little outlet dump off pocket pass, he's in a tough position now too, because he's attacking fast downhill at a dropping big man. So that's one of those, they'll see it on film, very fixable, more behavioral type of things, that it's not like a pride thing. It's not like, oh man, I need to get the ball. Like, that's a very fixable tweak that I think can help that pick and roll synergy as well.
Yeah, we certainly need some any kind of synergy on offense. It's been tough, man. KCP has been not shooting well. Caruso has not been shooting well. Now, maybe it's a little bit more forgivable for Caruso, is what he can do on the defensive end. But I think we're at the point where if the Lakers don't add another shooter or somehow improve their shooting come playoff time, I do deeply believe that is their Achilles heel. And it's all wrapped up into half court offense, obviously. And their efficiency there, but we'll put a pin in that. We'll keep an eye on it. I'm still going to measure this time without LeBron and AD. If you're getting open shots, you know, and you're still missing them, if there's that giant delta, Tim, between quality and performance, I'm going to be concerned. So that's my big watch, other than just the overall Drummond thing right now.
Right. And thinking back to last year, the team. So this year we are 7th in 3-point shot quality, and we are 25th in 3-point shot making, I believe. Last year we were 26th in 3-point shot making. So about the same, you know, performance versus expectations, but our shot quality was 2nd instead of 7th. And injuries have something to do with this, but even earlier in the season when LeBron and AD were both playing, we weren't 2nd. So the quality's down. The shot making itself hasn't risen, so that leads to the overall results being poor. And this is even with, like, KCP still showing up pretty good, because he started the year off crazy hot, even though he hasn't been recently. And same thing with Caruso. So it's a deteriorating situation. The fact that the shot quality itself is low means that it's going to be even worse than, like, when LeBron and AD come back, we're still going to miss open shots. But we're going to get more open shots, and we're going to perform better on, you know, open shots than contested shots. So it's as bad now as it will get, I think. And a big notable addition that this team could have is if Wes Matthews starts knocking down threes again. Him or Keith, they've got to start hitting some threes, because I don't anticipate Crusoe's going to bounce back to like the unsustainable rate he was hitting them. KCP's a little bit in his own head, and if he doesn't turn it around, that's concerning. I think you're right. This is a tricky situation. The team doesn't have a lot of I don't know how to quantify the reliable three-point shooters we have, but it is not many. And you know, the one addition that team made was bringing in a guy who's not going to be spacing the floor. And so you can't trade. I don't know who else the team can pick up at this point that might be available. We saw Gorgui Dieng brought to another team and then unfortunately got hurt like immediately.
They don't even have a Quinn Cook anymore who could theoretically just be one guy who can shoot. Like,
right. From a can't guard do anything standpoint. Else.
They just don't even have that.
Yeah. So that's really worrisome. JJ Redick was available. There were guys the team potentially could have pushed a little bit more for. We'll see how that situation develops over time, because the team still has a roster spot. They can make more room if they need to make more room. But do you think this is who the team is locking in with once we get to the playoffs? We saw it last season, the team add J.R. Smith really, really late. That was due to injury. Maybe we see something. It might not be due to injury, but between now and the playoffs, I hope there's more movement. I don't know if there will be.
I mean, I'll put it this way. If Alphonso McKinney is still on the team, and nothing personal against the guy, he's not really a useful NBA player in really any way, except just maybe his, physical attributes, and that's it. If he's still on the team, I think it's a big mistake. And it could even be somebody like a Glenn Robinson, like other, wings we talked about a little in the offseason who are available all of a sudden, I don't know. You just need an option, and McKinney isn't. So there's McKinney and another roster spot. So theoretically, you could make two roster spots while staying under the hard cap. But if Wes didn't just have a better game shooting, he actually had some great defensive plays on Middleton, and just showing his understanding of those guys' game was a useful, cog in that first quarter success. So I still believe in Wes. Remember, I from half court shot the Wes Matthews to the Lakers. Back in the offseason before that you was did. A name. Yeah. So I'm credit still a believer in what the theoretical things this guy can provide for the Lakers. Well, and being a successful fifth of a Danny Green replacement, which is not, really been the case this year.
Right. And looking at some of the data, even added more perspective for me, because Markieff Morris is someone that has also been underperforming from a three-point standpoint, but we saw him do it. We saw him be able to like knock those down in key moments and be a reliable floor spacer in a way that like me mentally, and I don't know about you, I haven't been as worried about him. But then I go look at his background, and he hasn't been a consistent three-point shooter in his career. It's been a lot of poor three-point shot making with last season being good and then like two seasons before that being good. So it's very up and down with him in a way that like if you knew nothing else but you just looked at that, you wouldn't say, oh, well, of course this guy's going to bounce back. Whereas with Wes, it's constantly been very solid until this year in a way that like without having watched the film, you'd be like, yeah, like I would expect this to improve. So that
or
was
the cliff.
Or it's the cliff. But like, he looks good in so many other elements of his game that, like, it's not – to me, it doesn't scream, oh, this guy's washed and, like, he just doesn't have it anymore.
But none of them have been clicking all at the same time yet either.
Yeah.
Until kind of that moment in that game. Comes down on one end, hits a three, goes down on the other end, completely shuts down Chris Middleton. Not saying I expect that on every, exchange, but the fact that he can have that sequence – makes me more encouraged now. Yeah.
Yeah. But and then later in the game, Gasol comes in, he's making those great plays. And then Wes was one of the guys who, like, he airballed a three real bad.
Like wide right.
One of the four or five different open threes the Lakers had an opportunity to cut the lead into seven, eight, a 9-point lead at different, or deficit, I should say, at different points. And just none of them went in. Yeah. So that's a good call out. I was pleased to see how Gasol responded. I he said things about, like, you know, I couldn't go back to Toronto because I'm not the player they needed me to be anymore. And he's not the same guy he used to be. But I still think he's a player this team needs, because he's our best post defender. He is our only spacing big among him, Drummond, and Harrell. And he's got the passing. He has a lot of the great elements. It, you know, aesthetically, it doesn't always translate, but the impact's there. A lot of the skill sets are there. And I think he needs to stay in this rotation. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the team handles the addition of Drummond. Hopefully he's back soon. You said maybe he misses a couple games, but hopefully he's back soon and we get to see some Gasol-Trez minutes together. And maybe we see some Drummond-Keith minutes once AD's back. AD can fit with any of these guys. So there are a lot of potential combinations of players in that front court that I'm just excited to see how it plays out. And I hope Laker fans can get behind this guy. I don't like seeing, like, people happy he's hurt or happy he's failing.
Yeah, and like, people.
Yeah, it's like, that's toxic. Come on. But at the same time, there are also people who are like, well, if you didn't think his first stint was good, you're not a Lakers fan, or like, you're just a hater. Like, come on. He, like, one thing that's not true is it didn't go from great first stint to he's bad now. It, like, the stepping on the foot wasn't evident to me. And like, I didn't see the incident itself, but like, looking at the film, he performed at a pretty high level throughout the entire first half. It wasn't just like, oh, this is where he got stepped on because he started stinking. Like, he played hard. He was getting better in a lot of areas as the game went along. Watching live is a little bit different than watching on the film, but like, this wasn't like a one stint performance from Dre. He added some really good things throughout the game. And like, you can't, there shouldn't be people on both sides calling each other, you know, wrong and haters and losers, and just, you know, root for the team, but we can still criticize and critique and look at his game. Yes, he's new. Yes, he hasn't played in a long time. We're talking about, like, we're here to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers, and we want them to succeed. We want them to win a title, and we're going to, you know, look at the areas from a coaching staff, from the team, where they are doing well, where they could critique things, because that journey is fun. That journey, seeing the team be not as good at something and then figure it out and get better at it, allows us to celebrate those victories. And those are things that if you are only perpetuating, oh, well, LeBron's a machine and he chooses to be bad at this, or like, this doesn't matter, this guy wasn't trying, or like, if you just completely just swat away anything negative, you won't be able to appreciate those little victories and that growth year to year, within the year, all of those things. So, you know, lean forward into the experience. It's not all going to be sunshine and roses, but that's part of what makes winning the title meaningful. Like, there's more of a visceral reaction as a fan when you win those games you didn't expect to win. If you just think, you know, we're the best team, no one can stop us, like, then how do you really get to enjoy that game? So, I don't know. I've always been someone who, like, I'll take a step back in the moment, whether I'm playing, coaching, or watching, and say, this is adversity. I'm going to lean in. This is what I'm here. Like, this is why sports are fun. I'm not here to just like beat the hell out of people. Like, this is what makes it fun to win, is the challenge. And I think we just have to, you know, from this perspective, you and me and the fans, embrace that, enjoy that. Don't shut your ears and your eyes to it. But also at the same time, like, don't go too overboard, or don't look at these guys and like be afraid to say, hey, like, why are they doing this? Or, you know, I don't know if I agree with that decision. Like, you don't have to blindly agree with everything the staff does or a player does or that we're saying to be a good fan. So I don't know. I just wanted to add that, because I've seen a lot of weird dialogue over the past couple weeks that you can tell the team is struggling because it's gotten in a strange place.
I think that's really well said and a good place to leave it, Tim. I mean, anytime people people live and die by this stuff, even if it's they can't see the forest for the trees, and that most people aren't really worried if they can get healthy. But last thing I'll leave you with, Tim, Lakers, what do you think their still starting lineup, Marcus Gasol, AD, LeBron, KCP, Schroeder, what's their net rating per clean the glass, which filters out garbage time, but.
I don't know. Plus 12 is what I'll say.
Close. Plus 13.6.
Nice. We'll that's have to see. That's pretty good, right? What is there a percentile on that?
That's good. That's 79th percentile.
Okay. Nice.
I'm just, these are lineup data. So 582 possessions with that starting lineup. The lineup of Matt is still third in this.
Jesus.
And a negative 17.5. You remember that when we were complaining about that lineup? And God, what I wouldn't give to complain about that lineup right now.
We had such first world problems when that was the one thing we had to complain about. Yeah, all of our lineups work. Everybody hits threes. Everybody's healthy. This was the only way you can configure these pieces in a way they won't work. Why are you doing it? Like, what the fuck? And to the point where it's still third in minutes.
It's still
third. They haven't played that lineup. When was the last time that lineup played, Tom?
It's been 2 months.
More than 2 months.
It's 2 months, yeah. It's like AD went out. Anyway, it's been weird. So let's leave it there for now. We'll come back hopefully next week, talk through the Kings game, the Clippers game, and maybe preview this little 5-game road streak and see what the Lakers can do to keep their head above water. Cause they did since the last time we recorded, they got wins against Cleveland. Wasn't pretty. That third quarter was great. Got that horrible, horrible game against Orlando. Tim, there were 103 rebounds in that game.
Oh my God. That's so many shots. Holy crap. Andre Drummond would have had like 40 rebounds. I know. That's fantastic.
So maybe he came in a little too late, but man, we'll leave it there for now. We'll catch your giant article. Your coda about Andre Drummond's experience for the Lakers. But until then, we will talk to you guys next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.